Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Our guest tonight in studio is Blackjack Hall of Famer John Chang. This is either John's first or second visit to our show, depending on how you count. We'll be talking to John shortly. On last week's show with Bob Nersessian, Michael Shackelford was a no-show. What happened was that the Tuesday before the show, Bob Nersessian called me up and said he had to be in Reno at the time of the show. I asked him if he could do the show on Wednesday if we could get the studio time. Nersessian said yes. I called up Shack while he was in the middle of a meeting and asked him if he could make it on Wednesday. Shaq says yes, but somehow didn't write it down. And it slipped his mind, hence no Michael. Anything you want to add to that, Mike?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it happened. I absolutely apologize to the audience and to you. It was entirely my fault. You called me when I was right in the middle of something and said, can you do it tomorrow at 9 a.m.? And I said, sure. And then I got on with what I was doing. And then the following morning, I thought, what time was I supposed to show up and do the show? I think it was around 11. I better call Bob and ask.
He called me at 9:15 during the middle of the taping.
That's a piss poor excuse. So it was all my fault, and I'm sorry.
Well, you can probably still get into heaven, or if you can't, it won't be because of that. All right. A video poker friend of mine set out a goal at the beginning of 2012 to win $30,000 gambling. Now, he has Social Security, and he has a pension, and he has some money in the bank, so $30,000 is quite enough for him. As of the 1st of December, he was ahead $32,000. He came to me and asked whether or not he should pack it in and stop gambling until January. That strategy would guarantee he made his goal. I asked him what kind of disaster it would be if his score fell to, say, $20,000 ahead for the year. He told me no kind of disaster at all. The $30,000 figure was one he sort of pulled out of his elbow, but meeting a goal is important to him. I suggested he keep gambling. First of all, he has to gamble in December at various casinos to keep up his mailers. And also, most casinos in Las Vegas are offering special gambling situations because this is a time of the year where there's not a lot of customers. There's lots of opportunities out there. Might as well go for it. Shaq, what would your advice have been on this in this situation?
I would have done the same thing you did and asked, what's so special about $30,000? And assuming he said, you know, that's just a nice round number and, that you know, that's just my goal. And, you know, I would have said, if there's some good opportunity in front of you, you should take it, even if you have to risk falling under the 30. However, if there's, you know, if there's nothing worthwhile to play, go ahead and quit. But I tend to oppose artificial markers like that. I get asked all the time, Mike, you know, what win and loss limits should I put on myself? And I hate the question because if there's a good game in front of you, just play it, you know. And if there's not, don't play at all.
Now, John Chang is chomping at the bit. We haven't introduced him yet, but John, did you want to say something about this?
You know, if you're a winning player, any rule that keeps you playing is a good one. On the other hand, if you're a losing gambler, any rule that causes you to stop is a good one.
I agree.
Yeah, that's a nice way to say it. On a somewhat related subject, got an email from, he's actually a friend, but he sent it to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. It seems as though he's taken a trip to Harrah's, New Orleans, and it's near the end of the year, and he's 32,000 points shy of seven-star status. Now, 32,000 points means $320,000. Now, he's willing to lose at most $7,000. So he's three games he's considering is $5 single line jacks or better, which is a 99.54 game. $10 play jacks or better, which is the same percentage. It's twice as much, but it's 10 play instead of single line. Or $10 play NSU. NSU is a deuces wild game returning 99.73. Now, he asked me what the best game to play is. Now, I actually didn't work it out. What I gave him was a methodology, and I'm going to share that methodology on the air because several times people have similar questions, although when you do it, it might not be $320,000, and it might not be a $7,000 limit, $7,000 loss limit, or it might be something, but... So it's like, how do you do it when you have these problems? The first thing I said is the $5 single line jacks is out. The it's the lowest return, and $5 single line has a much higher variance than $10 play of the same game. So $10 play jacks, even though it's twice as much coin in, has about 0.3% of the variance of single line $5 jacks. So $5 jacks is out. So now we're talking about $10 play NSU or $10 play jacks. The NSU is a higher return. It's 0.19 higher, but it's also a higher variance. Variance is 19.5 for jacks, 28 or something for NSU. Now, there is one product out there that actually helps you figure this out. It happens to be called Video Poker for Winner and has my picture on the front, so I'm rather partial to it. I don't promote it very often on the show, but tonight I am. In the bankroll version of it, it allows for 10-play calculations. So you put on, you go to NSU and you on the $1 variance, and then you go to the bankroll page, and you set in that you want to play 6,400 hands, which happens to be $32,000 on that game, and you're willing to lose $7,000, or that's the maximum you're willing to lose, and it asks for how much you're going to win or stop. So put 50,000 or something. A dealt royal is going to be 40,000, so you're not going to hit 50, basically. So that's you're never going to hit it, and then you submit the button. So when you finish with this, it will tell you what percentage of the time you're still playing, what percent of the time you went over that $50,000 ahead, which is going to be really close to zero, and what percentage of the time you you maxed your $7,000 limit. You got to $7,000 and you quit. Then you do exactly the same thing for jacks or better. You know, how often did you... get over 50,000? Never. And I mean, well, you can get two dealt royals. So, I mean, it can happen, but never. And how often do you go broke? And it'll give you some numbers. Once you have those numbers, you can make a considered opinion as to how to do it. So I actually did not do those numbers with him because telling anybody the numbers tonight on the air doesn't do anybody any good because that's not your problem. But knowing that it's there to help you when you have this kind of a decision to make, I think is very useful.
May I chime in on that?
Please.
First, I think that standard deviation is the statistic to look at for things like this, which is a lot closer. It's about 4.5 for jacks or better and about 5.5 for NSU.
Where standard deviation is a square root of the variance.
Yep. And... again, I would, much like the last question, I would ask, why the 7,000? You know, if this is just a nice round number that you know, he likes, I would say forget that number and play the NSU because it has the higher return. But let's say he's in a situation where that's seven. He may have plenty of money, but 7,000 is all the cash he can get his hands on. Then what I might say is start out with the NSU, and if it's not going well, you may have to switch to jacks or better. But it would pain me to play jacks or better if there was an NSU machine right next to it.
So as far as you're concerned, the higher return on the game trumps the higher variance or standard deviation.
Well, in this case, the standard deviations are not that different. And there have been situations where I have played an inferior video poker game because it had significantly less variance. But again, in this case, the difference is not that much. So I would definitely go with the higher return game.
All right, John, this isn't your video poker isn't your game particularly, but did you have anything you'd say?
I don't really have a considered opinion. I have to work it out. Say, you know, basically use the software. But yeah, you know, Mike brings up the point of, you know, what's so special about 7,000? Are you not going to buy Christmas presents for your kids if you lose that much or what?
You know? I don't know. He and I are going to have dinner together. He comes into town every year for
you know, if you're going to put 320,000 through, what's 7,000? You know, you could lose 30,000, you know.
Been there, done that. All right, so we've heard from John Chang. Why don't we tell you who he is? John Chang has been gambling professionally for several decades. He managed and or advised the MIT Blackjack team for well over 10 years. He's in the Blackjack Hall of Fame, and he's married to the delightful Laurie C., who was a guest here earlier this year. I first met John when he came to a semester of my video poker classes. He is the highest profile gambler who has ever come to my the entire semester of video poker classes, so I'm still pretty pleased about that. In the classes, I go around the room and ask people questions about the class content. John's answers told me immediately that this was a bright guy and an experienced gambler. Little did I know at the time exactly how bright and how experienced. John Chang, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
I'm happy to be here.
Good. Now, there are a number of blackjack teams, but for whatever reason, the MIT team is the one that's best known to the general public. Tell us from about when to when were there one or more MIT blackjack teams, and approximately how many total players were members of one or more of these teams?
Well, this is something that I really haven't spent a lot of time worrying about. You could actually read about it on the Wikipedia. And I don't know what happened really before I joined the team. I joined it in 1982. But it had been going on for some time. I mean, basically the people who started it were students when resorts opened in Atlantic City, which I believe was in 1978. They taught a course at MIT on how to gamble. And I attended that class, but I did not distinguish myself in any way whatsoever. In fact, I missed the first class, showed up for the second class. They were giving a basic strategy test, and I had no idea what it was about. It was 20 questions, and just gave various hands and asked you what to do with them. You know, 9-7 versus a 9. I said, split. You know,
split a 9 and a 7?
Well, if you could, that would be the right play. I didn't know. So I got
3 out of 20. Okay.
No, I got 4 out of 20 because there are 5 options. At the time, they were talking about Atlantic City. So it was hitting, standing, doubling, splitting, and surrender. So I got exactly what you'd get by just guessing.
All right.
Okay, so you've said that bringing down the house was only loosely based on your true story, and about the only true part of the 21 movie was that there was an MIT team at all. So in an effort to set the record straight, have you ever thought about writing your own book about the MIT blackjack team?
Not really. That's something that would be, it's kind of spitting into the wind. You know, people have an idea about what it is. You know, the fact that MIT is known for having a blackjack team, I think, is kind of like saying somebody who's smart, he he's an Einstein or something. You just pick out the exemplar of the kind of person who, you know, would satisfy that kind of personality. I could write a book, but it's not like
It's going to happen.
Yeah. But does it anger you at all that the movie is just so far removed from the truth?
No, it doesn't really anger me so much. What bothers me is I didn't get a single penny from the movie.
Did Ben Mezrich, when he wrote the book, Bringing Down the House, did he approach you for...
He did. He called me when I was in California asking me if I would agree to be interviewed. And I didn't say yes, and I didn't say no. I spoke to a friend of mine who is an entertainment lawyer in Los Angeles. And I said, if I tell my story, what am I going to get out of this? And he said, you're really not likely to make very much at all, maybe $10,000. And I thought, why should I be spilling my guts and possibly ruining my possible earnings for $10,000? Forget it. Little did I know it became a New York Times bestseller and a movie. I'm like, I guess that's different.
About the movie. It was the movie 21 was based loosely on the book. And in the movie, you were portrayed by Kevin Spacey as a real sleazy professor who turns on his teammates. When Andy Block was here on this show, he made a big point that you and the other team managers never betrayed any of the players. Now, how much of the book and how much of the movie was realistic?
Well, okay. You know, I've made this statement before. I think even on this radio show, it was basically something like, about half the book was true, Bringing Down the House. And actually, most of the book, Busting Vegas, was true.
We'll talk about that in a bit.
The movie itself took the part that was true and more or less threw it out. So the movie was almost completely made up.
But they did use numbers like, for 16, if the count was 16, they would use the word suite. As a clue.
Oh, yeah, okay. One night I was watching late night TV, and I saw this infomercial with Kevin Trudeau on it talking about memory systems. So I ordered it, and then he has this system which is pretty well known or whatever, and you assign numbers to words. And I was in the casino, I watched this thing with my girlfriend, and then we were in the casino, and I told her, pass me the count using the word. And she said something like, I saw a magazine over in the gift shop. And I'm like, magazine?
That means 17.
<That's> 17. And then the count dropped by one. And I said, that's sweet. Or it's like taking candy from a baby. And some gambler at the end of the table said, ain't that easy. And I just started playing. I thought, that's pretty natural. We should do that. And so we just ended up.
And that part they captured accurately in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Big deal.
It's an incidental. Yeah.
Really. All right.
So everybody knows that MIT has a blackjack team, and I've heard talk of other schools having them as well. But how come you only hear about MIT?
Well, it's the same idea what I was just saying about, Einstein, right? It's like, what school is where the nerds are going to come from? the card counters. It's MIT, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, right? MIT is, shall we say, marginally better than Caltech. Caltech has...
Caltech's way smaller.
I have
smaller.
A feeling we're going to get mail about that.
That's the only reason. But Caltech has definitely had, advantage players, card counters, and stuff like that come in here for forever. And, who's first? I don't know, But, we kind of finessed the issue because my girlfriend, one of my other girlfriends, went to work at JPL. So we recruited from JPL and Caltech as well.
Okay. All right. Now... The Ben Mezrich sequel called Busting Vegas, the MIT whiz kids who brought casinos to their knees, you get called Victor, and you're portrayed as the cheapest SOB who ever existed. The book begins with a story about an airplane that you bought because you thought owning your own plane would be cheaper than playing retail, flying from Boston to Atlantic City and other places. In the story, at nighttime, you get the plane up in the air and you tell your MIT passengers that you don't know how to navigate at night, so you need their help in figuring out where to go. Since they're smart enough to get into MIT, and it's just a math problem, you figured they could do it or die trying. First of all, is that story basically true? And secondly, did you successfully land the plane or did you die?
Well, right. I died. there's all kinds of distortions here. My God. Well, yes, I did fly a plane. And there was one passenger in that plane. And I exhibited some bad judgment on that flight. Absolutely. We were heading from Atlantic City to Princeton, New Jersey, and I'd never flown there. I had rarely flown at night. And, the instrumentation in my plane was primitive. So I kind of got lost, not exactly. And it's like, well, there's three fields here I can see at night, and I'm not sure which one it is. So I did a little circle in the air and did some navigation and that kind of thing. So
Ben Mesrick took a few liberties with
Of course we didn't die. but I did not exactly land the plane very successfully. I crashed the plane, yes. I exhibited bad judgment even taking off. It was in front of a cold front at night in a plane that I wasn't, in a plane whose front headlight was out. I was such a novice pilot that I didn't realize my headlight was out. It's kind of like driving around with parking lights on. Okay.
Is a headlight that important for an airplane?
Can't see.
Well, I mean, how much?
Okay. Well, this is why it was important. When I landed, I weather vaned. It was a crosswind. It caused you to turn into the wind, and as a result, I ran off the runway. And when I ran off the runway, I didn't really know the Princeton field. I thought, I can just slow down on the grass and stop. What's the big deal? Well, it just turns out that the Princeton airfield has a river running right down the middle of it.
Oh, that is a big deal.
And there's a little bridge, but, it doesn't extend to this beyond the runway. So I ran into the abutment when I attempted to cross the stream. Now, if my front headlight had been on, I would have seen the planes parked there, warning me not to go there, but I didn't really see it until I was practically on top of it. And then I'm thinking, oh man, I'm going to die. But, the abutment stopped me.
So did they take away your pilot's license or anything after that?
No, but I took away my own pilot's license.
Oh, good. That's something good that happened.
I mean, when I play blackjack and when I do most things, I have a certain kind of risk profile about doing things. If I make a mistake, is it deadly or is it just a minor inconvenience? Well, in most things, it's a minor inconvenience. So, I made a mistake, but I'll just move on and learn from it. Well, that doesn't really work when you're flying a plane.
Yes. It's almost binary.
yeah. So
why don't you ask him something else, Michael?
Okay. Did MIT ever have issues with dishonest players? And if so, what did they do about it?
We had probably a couple dishonest players. They did hurt us. But I would say that wasn't really our biggest problem. People would warn us about such players and we'd be on the alert or whatever. I mean, other players would be cognizant of suspicious behavior. Most of the time, we had very little real problems with it. I think in general, people who have to work hard to do this, they're not going to end up being thieves. Okay, it's just not that easy. It's like I have to work so hard to steal money from these guys. Forget it.
So if you made it easier to steal money from you, you would have had worse luck?
Well, I think if we hadn't had such stringent checkouts, then you might have had a much different kind of attitude for players, and they might have taken money.
So you said that wasn't your biggest problem. So what was?
I would say the biggest problem, I'm not sure exactly, but I'd say betrayal was a problem. Okay, when certain players felt like they'd been wronged, they would turn us into surveillance or Griffin or something like that. And then I would say things like
so what Kevin Spacey did in the movie was sort of what other people did, not you. But that was sort of, that kind of thing happened?
Well.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm not sure exactly what Kevin Spacey did. But, I mean, there was at least one or two players who turned us in, okay, and made it very difficult for the team to play and brought the attention of the casinos on us, I mean, to a large degree. We were more or less anonymous before that, and then we became famous and really
in a bad way.
Yeah, right. So they went after us. And we tried to fight back, but it didn't work very well. But I would say actually probably the thing that costs more money to us and in general to gamblers is all the financial regulations, you know, Reg 6A, the drug war, all that kind of stuff. You know, you get money confiscated. You can't give you can't go over 10,000 without giving a false name. You know, I mean, there's all kind. I mean, you have to give a real name if you go over 10,000. So, you know, those things stop you from taking very much money out of the casino. That's the biggest problem.
When Nersessian has been on the show, we talked several times about authorities confiscating money when players are traveling by car or going through airports. Now, you had an incident where you had this problem while riding a bicycle. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Oh, gee. You know, let's see. I was riding to Hanscom Field from Cambridge with a backpack. It had $50,000 in it, and I think a felt and some other stuff. I was going to meet somebody there and go flying, probably to Atlantic City or maybe to
Connecticut?
Connecticut, yeah. I don't remember anymore. But anyway, on my way there, I passed this bus. It disgorges passengers, and this lady, like, jaywalked through some cars and jumped in front of me,
Can't run her over.
Well, I hit her knee with my pedal, and then she made me go out of control, and I hit the back of the bus. Okay. And I fell on the ground. I was like stunned. Okay. So, people are like running over. Are you okay? And that kind of thing. Somebody calls an ambulance, and I'm like lying on the ground, and my wind is knocked out of me. Anyway,
running into
sure
a bus
okay.
is a rather unforgiving.
Well, you know, it's a smooth back. It wasn't that bad. Okay. You know, there wasn't any, like, you know, Ben Hur hubs on it or anything like
good.
That.
All right. So so the police get there.
Well, actually, no. The ambulance gets there.
The ambulance
okay, so
gets
they
there.
See, they see the woman with her knee cut from my pedal, and they rush over to her, and I'm lying there like, hey, what about me?
Triage doesn't always work.
So, you know, they go, oh, yeah, okay, what's wrong with you? Oh, I hit the back of the bus, whatever, you know. Do you have an internal bleeding? I don't know, you know. Anyway, so They load me into the ambulance. They take my backpack from me. Oh, wait, you know, that's fine. You know, that's okay. It'll be taken care of. Nobody will take it. I'm like, okay, you know. And I had almost no experience with police at this point in my life. Maybe a speeding ticket or something like that. They take me to the hospital, and, like, I just sit there. I sit there on this table for like an hour or two. I don't remember. And I'm kind of feeling myself. And am I bleeding? I think I'm all right, you know.
But it sounds like somebody went and opened up the backpack.
Yeah. So I leave the hospital. And I just basically check myself out. And then a cop says something to me like, we went through your bag for safekeeping and we found some money in it. And I'm like, well, yeah, okay. And so what? we'd like to talk to you about it. Oh, well, okay. What do you want to know? That's a rather large amount of money, don't you think? Yeah, so what? this is in the early 90s, well before 9/11 and all these kind of things. So anyway, they had had some home invasions of Chinese restaurant owners who I guess keep a lot of cash in their houses. I don't really know. But apparently they thought I was somehow involved in that. You know, they were looking up and they
caught you with the evidence.
The gang unit it's all $100 bills. That's what you pay for when you go into a restaurant. I don't think so. Anyway. I'm in Arlington and, the cops there are not, this is a suburb of Boston and they're not used to dealing with gangs or anything like that. I had like a strategy chart with me and I was trying to explain it to them. They were kind of befuddled. But then my teammates showed up and they tell them, well, yeah, we're MIT students and we play blackjack and here's our strategy and what else do you want to know? Here's my student ID and all this kind of stuff. And so they basically let us go, you know.
That's nice to hear a happy ending to that kind of story for once.
Okay.
All right. Do you have any advice for up-and-coming advantage players on which angle to pursue?
It's actually hard for me to say because I'm not really in the game day-to-day anymore. Okay, I don't play that much anymore. I go out there and I screw around sometimes, but it really is just screwing around. I'm not there to make a ton of money. I'm not trying to extract all this money and live off of it or something like that on my own. All right, now, so that being said, so I'm not that qualified at this point to be able to make a statement like that, but, it just strikes me that most of the time the opportunity is in things that isn't well publicized, you know, things that require a little bit of thinking, okay, to identify. And in general, I would say that's a problem with, the way we ran the team and stuff. I mean, basically, I kind of realized this going in that I could make as much money playing on my own or playing with the group. In fact, I probably would have made more money had I played on my own because I didn't realize about certain other factors like the fact that you teach these people, you're basically creating your own competition. And at the time I was thinking, well, you know, they're on our team and this kind of thing, we'll all play together. But that just doesn't seem the way that it works out for most gamblers, not just me. You know, you teach somebody something and they'll work with you for a while, but then, either they have enough money now to go and play on their own, they don't want to chop it with you, or there's some conflict with somebody else in the group and they're not liking this person, so they want to go do something else, whatever. You know, so anyway, you end up not getting a piece of the action of the teammates that you train. So that kind of thing makes it so that it's not usually the best idea to teach people everything you know. not a lot of people, maybe a small group you can keep it together, but Well, anyway, that's okay, that's good. My opinion after a long experience.
Now, for the past 30 or so years, you've made a significant proportion of your money, either directly or indirectly, through gambling. If you had to do it over again, are you glad you decided to get your money this way, or would you choose a more traditional job?
Yeah, well, I'm ill-suited to working in a corporate environment.
Okay, so...
And it's not like, oh, yeah, well, you know, because I've been doing this for so long, I've developed that kind of personality. I think I was not like that from the beginning. And I realized that. So, you know, when I was at MIT, I'm looking at, oh, I can go work for HP. I'm like, I don't really want to do that. And so I just kind of sat there thinking about what I should do instead. And,
all right. So know. So given that gambling was the right choice for your personality, would you do it in blackjack again, or would you pick something else if you had to do it over again?
Well, I think I would start it in blackjack, but I think generally speaking, the successful blackjack players are the ones who move out of blackjack. You know, it's a good training ground for thinking about problems, for just sort of generally doing gambling. But, you know, gambling in a broad sense is not just in the casino. It's all over the place. I mean, you got Wall Street. You have just investing in companies. Any kind of bet you can make, okay? So that's where people who've moved beyond blackjack have done very well. You know, you look at, well, the originator is Ed Thorpe, right? Well, he got out of blackjack before I even started, you know? I mean, way before I started, he was doing options and you know, the financial markets, which is a much bigger game.
Very successful at that. I was guessing you would say that you would have gone into horse racing, betting on horse racing. Would have been my guess as to what you'd answer tonight, and I was wrong.
Well, okay. You know, the horse racing does have some very successful people in it, but at the time, that would have been a daunting project, even for Bill, you know, Bill Benter. You know, he started at least 5-6 years after I would have started or something, and it was very difficult for him. He almost didn't make it, and I don't think that would have been the appropriate time for me to get into that. Well, I mean, if I'd waited that long, maybe, but anyway, that's kind of water under the bridge.
Okay, so you said that you're not gambling much anymore. May I ask what you're spending your time doing?
Well, I'm advising different groups and stuff like that, so I can't really talk too much about that. You know, I use the skills and techniques that I learned just over the years to advise them about how to play games and stuff.
Well, if you're a consultant to players, are you interested in putting it out there that this service is available and how to contact you?
Well, you can contact me. I mean, okay, you know, you can send email to mitjohnnyc@gmail.com.
Okay, MIT,
so if you're interested.
Johnny C, spelled Johnny, J-O-H-N-N-Y.
Right.
And C spelled like C?
Just C, yeah, the letter C.
All right, mitjohnnyc@gmail.com.
Yeah, you know, I have a piece of the action, so that's my compensation for the group. And, you know, they don't pay me anything else beyond that. So, you know, whatever. That's just what's going on with that.
You have two delightful children. And good chance there your daughter's going to end up to be a real cutie like her mommy. Now, if they decided to be gamblers when they got to be older, would that please you, or would that you'd try as hard as you can to talk them out of it?
Well, okay, you know, it's sort of the same idea as the successful blackjack players moving on. I have no problem whatsoever with their playing some blackjack. You know, I mean, casinos, I feel, are generally, in general, they're a tax on the lazy and stupid, okay? But, or lazy or stupid, I guess is more accurate. But, you know, they're also a scholarship for the motivated and intelligent, you know? So,
yes, they are.
You know, so it's okay. Now, there is a problem, I feel.
I'm going to use that line in my classes. This is good.
Yeah. Thank you. So, you know, now the problem is that they can make you lazy and satisfied. You know, if you have more than what it takes to do that, it would be kind of a tragedy, I think, to just devote your life to that. So, you know, I'd say, oh, yeah, you know, summer job, you know, forget about whatever. I don't know, you know, washing dishes or something. I mean, waiting tables, you know, go and play some blackjack. Sure. I mean, you know, my wife, she paid for grad school in biz school, you know, which I don't know how much that was, but it's not cheap. And she paid for it by playing blackjack. So, you know, she'd pay people to, like, do some of her homework and stuff. Here, have $100, whatever. I mean, students need a lot, you know, they need money. They value money. And so if you can make some, you know, what looks like big money for a student is not such big money for somebody who's 50 or 60 years old, you know. So
I bet Laurie'd be good at talking people into doing things for her.
Yeah, so, you know, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, well, you know, I'm kind of like that guy in Bull Durham, you know, Crash Davis, Kevin Costner's character. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like the home run leader in the minor leagues, okay? And blackjack really is the minor leagues. You know, it's good for developing your skills, but it shouldn't be where you end up, you know? I mean, if you do, it'd be like, yeah, okay. You know, I talked to Ed Thorpe in March, and he said, yeah, you know, I used to go and get disguises and get, you know, get threatened, and, you know, people put drugs in my coffee and things like that. Like, whoa, you know. And he basically said, yeah, I decided there's no future in this. Not really. I mean, there is a future. I've heard it for 30 years. Oh, there's this game is over. You can't win, that kind of stuff. Well, okay, that's not true. You can still beat the game. But can you make a difference in the world? Will you make a difference in the world? Yeah, you know, I kind of finessed that by having a movie made about me, and I suppose that could make some difference in the world, but I think maybe I'm just fooling myself.
You had a movie made about you? All right, good. John Chang, thank you very much for being here. This was interesting and very entertaining. Michael, what do you think we learned tonight?
Oh, well, we learned that card counting is the minor leagues of advantage play, and I still want to know what the major leagues are.
I don't think he'd put video poker in the major leagues.
Playing in a casino is all the minor leagues, pretty much. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
you know, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to take some money from the casino. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. But taking billions of dollars from Wall Street is more of a major league. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, sure. You know, if you were, well, the financial markets are much bigger, and, you know, doing things like, well, just stuff in Silicon Valley, you know, starting up companies, software, biotech, just science in general, you know, there's genomics. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff out there that's going to make a difference in the world. Now, I did some of that stuff. You know, I had a software startup. It's not easy, okay? Mm-hmm. You need talent, you know? You can't just slide by like you can in a casino. So, you know, the world doesn't want to be saved, you know? Like, you go out there and you think you're doing it for the world, forget it. It's just not going to work, okay?
All righty. That was good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Michael, what's happening on the various Wizard websites?
Okay, have a few different things to talk about. I added some Ultimate X strategies for Jacks Are Better, Bonus Poker, Bonus Poker Deluxe, Double Bonus, and Joker Poker. These are just single strategies. It doesn't make any difference what the multipliers are. And surprisingly, these single strategies come pretty close to the optimal return. I added a page just yesterday, I think, on a game I saw at the Red Rock called Keno Draw Poker, which is like video poker, but there is a multiplier that is determined based on the draw of a Keno game. But what I'm most proud of is I added a bingo calculator. And what the purpose of this is you play a session of bingo, you write down how many of each kind of ball was called, how many B's, I's, N's, G's, and O's, and how many people called bingo. Put this into the calculator, click what kind of game it was, whether it be a single hard way, double bingo, six-pack, coverall, whatever, and it'll estimate the number of cards that were in play. And this should just be considered a rough guess, but if you do it for every single game, you can get a decent idea of the number of cards that were in play. And I've been doing a lot of work on bingo lately, and with bingo, it's critical to know how many cards you're facing against, and they don't tell you that. So for astute bingo players, this application will help you determine that. And I'm proud to say that I wrote this myself. This was not a project I just delegated to JB as I usually do.
Now, are you using maximum likelihood here?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes, I can remember maximum likelihood estimators from college, and at least the way it works, I hope, is doing that properly.
Good. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. Through December 24th, which is this coming Monday, the South Point will charge you 50% if you use accumulated slot club points for things like rooms, meals, gift shop, liquor store, New Year's Eve tickets, etc. Christmas Day, December 25th, there'll be double points on video poker, midnight to midnight. I will be on the quick quads machine. Double points on Christmas is the true meaning of Christmas as far as I'm concerned. At the Palms, every Friday and Saturday evening at 7 p.m. from now through the end of December, they have the $70,000 Greedy Grinch Money Bags drawings. Based on your play, the first five players picked, they get a money bag whose prices are from $350 to $3,500. The average is slightly more than $900. Five other players win an iPad mini, an Apple gift card, or $100 in cash. You earn double drawing entries on Tuesdays and Sundays. The PEW gifts, Play, Earn, and Win, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, are gift cards, mainly Visa cards. This is at a rate of point, so this is almost double points, and Visa gift cards are something that are basically universally usable. Sometimes the PEW gifts are, well, you don't want another toaster, but a lot of us have an infinite capacity to use as many Visa gift cards as we can get. At videopoker.com, this month, the monthly contest will be Dream Card. This is the monthly contest will start on 22nd and go through the end of the month. Dream Card is a 10-coin per line game where periodically, instead of a fifth card, you get a Dream Card, which is the best possible card available given the first four cards. If you would like a different Dream Card, you have the option of picking it. The videopoker.com is owned primarily by Ernie Moody. Ernie Moody is the inventor of Triple Play and Quick Quads and all these of various games. I'm supporting Ernie for the VP Free Video Poker Hall of Fame this year. If you belong to VP Free and have not cast your vote yet, I strongly recommend you go with Ernie Moody. He has made a bigger difference in the games that we play than anybody else out there. Next week, our guest will be Michael Koenig for his third visit to our show. Michael previously spoke about his book Smart Money, about sports betting, and The Man with $100,000 Breast, which is a great story. This time, Koenig will be discussing his first novel called Becoming Bobby. This is the second release from the Huntington Press literary fiction imprint they call Vegas Lit, where the first one was Arnold Snyder's book, Risk of Ruin, which we spoke about a month ago. I also mentioned last week that I was about to have cataract surgery in one eye, and I did last Thursday. I had several best wishes kind of calls and emails, and those of you who sent those, thank you. The surgery went very well. According to the doctor's estimates beforehand, I'm about at the 80th percentile in the range of what he thought it was going to end up being. So I'm very pleased by that. In a couple weeks, I'll have my other eye operated on. I'm hoping that goes as well, too. I'm surprising what people really look like when I actually can see them. Now, it's a week and a half until the December 31st deadline for the fiscal cliff, which will happen if the Congress and the President can't get some sort of a compromise. Now, they probably are going to compromise, at least on some of the things. But we don't know what that compromise is going to entail. Now, some of those are going to have tax implications for gamblers. Now, we had a tax expert on the show a few months ago, Ann Fried-Lefton, and she says she'll come back and talk to us about the ramification for gamblers once Congress and the President decide what to do. Until then, she has nothing really to say because they haven't made their compromise yet. Very good. So I got another question for John Chang, since he's still in the studio, and we got about 2.5 minutes left. When new casinos open up, and one opened up last week down in Louisiana, I think, there's a new dealers, new pit crew, new rules, and lots of crowds. Generally speaking, is this a good time to show up and hit casinos and look for soft spots or not? What would your thing be?
Sure, it's always a good time to go for most people. For me, it can be problematic because they concentrate on people who are well known. So, you know, there were times where I'd show up in a casino and they'd be paging my name, like Griffin would already be there, kind of thing. So, you know, it wasn't always such a good idea for me. But
you didn't know that until you got there.
Well, that's right. So it can be, it's usually a good idea because they'll just, like, make mistakes. They'll pay you when you're not supposed to be paid. They might take your money when you're supposed to be paid, too. But if you just, object when it is in your favor, don't object when it's in your favor and object when it's not, then, well, you have a winning game.
That's true.
Okay, quick question. Do people ever confuse you with Johnny Chan?
Well, I suppose, but, we're pretty different.
Yeah, you don't look much alike.
But a lot of people don't know what you look like. So if you introduce yourself as John Chang, you're that poker player.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
Does that ever happen?
It might, but I don't really pay much attention. It's not really very common. You did ask me one thing about what I'm doing these days, I would have to say that some of the reason I'm not so keen on playing these days is because of, you know, the competition kind of thing and, teaching people to become your own competitor. And, you know, so and my skills are not as good as they used to be. OK, so I feel like I want to get in a business where I can help people without creating my own competition, where I don't have to worry about getting my skills diminishing over time. So, you know, we've gone into some other businesses. And that's basically
all right. Thank you, John Chang. Good night, everybody. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes.
Good night.
Okay.
All right.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.